Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R and 0HPR. Yeah, well, great. Yeah, we're all set here. It'll be quite Christmas at home. We'll put the gifts out, and kids will have the traditional early morning surprise there. So that's good. We wrote the letter to Santa Claus and the email and all that. Yeah, I'm glad you liked the Solder Smoke 11. It was a bit of a learning process to figure out how to get it all. The editing wasn't difficult. That was kind of fun. It was the uploading. It was a bit of a chore. But I think I finally cracked the code and figured out what I was doing wrong. Had a couple of points and we got it up onto the system. And it's been fun watching the hit count go up. We're up to, I think I told you in an email, we're up to about 179 downloads on the last issue. You notice a real dramatic increase in the number of downloads every time you put out a message on it. Some of the Usenet groups that I sent the announcement to, you'd see it did result in 30 or 40 additional downloads over the next 12, 36 hours. But sending it out to QRPL had a real big impact. The message that you posted, I think it resulted in something like 75 or 90 additional downloads in a very short period. I'm sure we'll get some more over the next day or so. So it's fun to see that people are actually using it, I'm kind of enjoying it. It's kind of neat to think that people all over the world are listening to this thing, and of course, so we're very grateful for the listeners. I've been hacking a little bit here too, but not at the workbench, more at the computer. I told you last week I was working on understanding the design parameters for solid state amplifiers, and so I've been cracking the books and just trying to get my make sure that I've got an accurate understanding of all the, well, not all of them, but the basic design parameters. I think I've got it, and I did something a little bit different, Mike. I want to tell you about it. Instead of using SPICE to model the transistors and the amplifiers, and instead of using the curve tracer that you were discussing, I took a different approach, and I just used a spreadsheet, just the Microsoft spreadsheet that comes with the Windows, and I plugged in all the different formulas and all the different parameters that you have to adjust for, the emitter resistor, the load, the value of the load, the VCC, and the beta of the transistor, the kind of the peak and RMS values of the input signal, and I set up the spreadsheet so it'll give you all the output variables there, also the gain, the resulting collector current, the drop across the load, and everything else. Really neat. And for me, it's a much better way to do it than to play with SPICE. And I'm able to play around and see what would the effect be of a different load, what would be the effect of a different emitter resistor, how much I can drive the thing before it goes into distortion. Why it distorts, where it distorts, whether it's a current problem or a voltage problem. A lot of fun and very simple. So now I think I'm about ready to turn to the workbench and actually build the thing and see if it performs as promised by the spreadsheet. KL7R M0HBR.
Oh, that's perfect. Hey, can you tell me which chapters in experimental methods you're looking at and what exact pages so I can kind of follow along. That's a great idea, and I'm glad it's working for you. That's interesting that you can see if it's going to distort. Is there some formula that tells you when it's going to clip or when it's going nonlinear, when it's going out of bias or something, when it's going nonlinear there over?
TL7RMZR HBR. Well, I left my copy of it downstairs, so, but I think I'll tell you where it is. I'm still in the very early chapters of solid state design for the radio amateur. Sometimes I find experimental methods better. Sometimes I think solid state design is more useful. And on this, I've been using solid state design. And if you go to, I think it's the first or the second chapter of solid state design, they discuss the small signal model. And they just describe the, they give you the, he gives you the math for the, to determine, how to determine the base resistance on a standard, common emitter, BJT, transistor amp. And it goes through this small signal model. And it's really pretty simple. In terms of the distortion, what you could do is, you set it up, you set up the DC parameters and you see what your idle, I guess you call it the idle current is, what the DC current is through the transistor. We're talking class A here. What the current you have going through the emitter, essentially the collector, that current. Then when you put the signal in, you keep an eye on the, the peak current the peak collector current that this signal at the base would cause. You just have to make sure that your DC idle current always exceeds the peak signal current through the transistor, if you know what I mean. If not, you bottom out. And in terms of the voltage, then what you do is you look at the load that you have in the collector circuit, and you look at the voltage drop across the load that this current will cause, and you got to make sure that the voltage drop across the load does not exceed basically the voltage that you have between the collector and the emitter, because there you'll run into a different kind of a distortion. But it works for me, and it's kind of fun. It's really neat to play with the different parameters and have it all on the spreadsheet. I could probably send you the spreadsheet, and you could play around with it. I was tempted this morning to take it and then just build the thing in Spice. But every time I go to Spice, I end up leaving the shack kind of frustrated and mad. I don't want to do that on Christmas Eve, so I think I might steer clear of Spice today, Mike. Your audio, I can tell you're going through the radio, so it's got a little bit of the radio sound to it, which is fine. But it was a little bit low there on that last one. I think you might have been a little bit far away from the mic. I'm recording. And I'll do this one too. But you just sounded a little bit weak on the modulation on that last one. KL7RM0HBR.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, I always have to remind myself to get to put my mouse on the right hand side of this VX5. I always seem to miss the mic hole. But yeah, so I'm looking here at page 12, 13, 14, 15, and I think it pretty much follows what you were saying there. Well, that's great, and you make it sound doable there. I'll have to give that a whiz and see what that's what that does for me there. I got everything you said there except for the collector emitter versus drive. The current to the load resistor versus collector emitter voltage. I'll have to read up on that a little bit. I understood the rest of it there. Well, great. I wonder if I'm coming through okay now. I notice I'm hitting in yellow periodically. I can adjust it if it's not enough. Let's see, what have I been doing around here? I played some more with the binaural receiver that I had. I've blown up a number of amplifiers in the DDS VFO boards. I had version 1 DDS VFO, and it had a Mar 6 amp in it, and that ran quite a while and then popped. And then I had and I found a replacement for it in my junk box, and I had a thing that said various transistors, and a Mar 6 was in there, the only MMIC I had. So that was kind of, I popped that in there, got that working again, and then I had a Rev 2 DDS VFO that had something like a Mar 10 in it, and that one popped. And I didn't have a replacement for it, so I just shorted past the Mar 10 with a capacitor and just used it as a signal source rather than a source with the driver. And then I got the DDS granddaughter card, which had a Linear Technologies op amp, and I put that in there, and it was getting good drive into my two SBL1 mixers, but it was getting hot, so I sent a note to QRPL and asked about that, and some people said, yeah, it ran hot, and other people said, well, you must be doing something wrong, and so I figured I must be doing something wrong, so I put a 2N2222 buffer amp between the DDS VFO and my phasing 90 degree phasing coil toroid that goes to the two binaural SBL1 mixers, so I got to experiment with trial and error method of biasing that thing, but I did manage to get it to work class A. I found a wideband in Sprat. I found a wideband amp. It didn't have enough drive, so I wound up decreasing the emitter resistor from 800 ohms down to 100 ohms, and I brought the drive up, and the 2N2222 got hot, so I put a heatsink on it, and now everything seems to be working. So I'm gonna run that binaural receiver like that for a while and see if I blow the 2N2222 instead of the DDS VFO amp. Did a small mod to the pickle board, got it to where it'll work with different pick chips. And I made an audio circuit tracer that I found in ADN magazine. It's pretty cool. It changes the audio pitch based on the amount of conductivity. So if you got a nice good short, if you got a good solder connection, it makes a certain tone pitch. If it's a bad solder connection, it makes a different pitch. And if it's a resistor, it basically goes from tick 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 to maybe a 2 kilohertz beep there. I don't know why that happened. I had a funny sound. M0HBR KL7R.
Yeah, the KL7R on the Mendenhall Glacier from M0HBR in London. Yeah, that was a weird sound. It was right as you were talking about the alarm there. It was almost what that was about. But it started beeping pretty good. Yeah, well, interesting on the binaural receiver experiments. And when you mentioned, you talk about the DDS board there and going into the SBL mixers, I was just struck by the difference in technology there. I mean, those SBL mixers are just so dirt simple. I mean, just diodes and coils, and you're feeding it there with the much more complicated DDS board. But you know that little amplifier, that buffer amplifier that you described, that's exactly the kind of problem. The design of that kind of amplifier is exactly what I've been struggling with, and how to pick those values, how to pick the value of the emitter resistor. And what this little spreadsheet that I'm going to send you hopefully captures, I hope it captures it right, because there may be errors in it. What I think I've got there is I've just taken all the information out of those pages in Solid State Design and some others and kind of just put them into a spreadsheet. And it gives you the ability, of course, as the spreadsheets always do, to just change one parameter and see how it affects all the others. So, for example, it would let you know the impact of changing that emitter resistor on the current going through the collector circuit, the idle current, and also the impact that changing that emitter resistor will have on the input impedance of the amp, which is also important, because you get into kind of a circular thing. You change the emitter resistor, and that changes the idle current, but it also changes the input impedance, and that in turn affects how much the signal, the input signal, is going to affect the current in the collector circuit. So this is really the ideal situation for a spreadsheet, and that's why I've kind of chose to, I've used it. I'm going to send you, as soon as we get done here, I'll email you the spreadsheet, and you can play with it a little bit, and you can see what I'm talking about a little bit better. But I think it'd be a good application for that. The only other hacking I've been doing is with consumer electronics, Mike. We recently got a new digital video camera, a Sony, and I've been struggling with figuring out how to use the software that comes with it and how to make movies and everything else. First, I was really frustrated with it, and thought it was going to be a bit of a disaster. But I had a breakthrough yesterday, and now I know how to download the video. And the Windows Movie Maker is a lot better than the software that came with it. So now I can edit movies and make little clips and take pictures and everything else. And it's great fun. I could see that we might have to soon come out with a video version of Solder Smoke. When everybody gets really wide bandwidth, we could do this in video. Might be scary. And I use the camera, I think I told you in an email, I tried to get a kind of a cover picture for Solder Smoke, for the Solder Smoke web page, or our media page where people download it. And it's a picture of the workbench with a cloud of solder smoke rising from the soldering iron. And my son helped with generating the solder smoke. He got a kick out of that as I took the picture. But I had trouble uploading it, but that'll be our next software challenge. KL7R, M0HBR.
Roger. I changed radios. I think my handy talkie was complaining there at the end, so I'm on my 100D here. Pulled it off HF. Use it on VHF. So. Oh, fine on the curl of smoke. That'll be interesting to see. I can't wait to see that. I'd be interested to see your spreadsheet there. I've got open office. Hopefully I can read that Excel spreadsheet with open office. If not, I can take it to work and convert it to another format that I can read. That'll be interesting. It'll be fun to look at what you chose as useful formulas and then compare them to what's going on here in Solid State Design and other books. So, yeah, that circuit I found for the wideband amp was in Sprat. It was the low power scrapbook, and it was a trans alt band TX is what I started with on page 123 there of the low power scrapbook. And he used that buffer amp twice, and it was pretty interesting. He had like 120 ohms going up to up to 12 volts, and then he had 820 ohms in the emitter, and that made a nice Class A, but it didn't have any kick. So I dropped the emitter resistor, and then it had a lot more kick. Seems kind of backwards that dropping the emitter resistor would increase the gain, but I guess that increases the current, and then that increases the power, not so much the voltage, but the power. Well, what else is going on around here? That's pretty much it. I had this old DC to DC converter from Embedded Research that I traded. I traded some stuff. I traded an old Zenith Transoceanic for what another guy thought was valuable to me. And one of the things was this DC to DC converter. And it basically takes anything like 2 volts and converts it to 12. And I never successfully got the thing to work. It actually caught fire on me. The FET, there's an FET in there, like a 2N7000 FET, and it lit up like a I don't know how to explain it. It's like those snakes you use on the 4th of July. The thing caught fire and just and I can't get it to switch anymore. I don't know what I've blown up. So every once in a while I bring that thing out and see if I can resurrect it, because it would be so cool to have 12 volts in my. My little Elecraft KX1. If I could have 3 batteries, it's got 2 sets of 3 batteries, so that gets 9 volts or something. And if I could have 3, that would be 4.5. And if I could take the 4.5 and jack it up to 12, then I could get the full 5 watts out of the thing for a short period of time. Anyway, that was the plan, but I wound up killing this here switching. This is a DC to DC converter. Ah, my volume is low again. M0HBR, KL7R.
There we are, KL7R. M3. Well, I sent you the spreadsheet. You should be able to open it up with just about anything. It's pretty simple. But, your audio sounded good all the way through. Interesting. Yeah, this is, it's good that you're playing with the... with the transistor, the amp circuit there, just as I'm kind of struggling with the same thing here, and I was just emailing you the spreadsheet, and interesting projects there, Mike, as always. I've got the urge to get over and start melting solder other than generating solder smoke. I got to do that. Let's see. I had a couple other things I wanted to mention to you here. In the course of struggling with the software, I downloaded Firefox, so I became part of the Mozilla revolution or counter revolution or whatever it is. So I've been playing with that a little bit. And in QRP news, I was going to have a big gong here. My kids have a gong downstairs, and I was going to have a sound effects, but we don't have the gong in the room, so gong, QRP news. Interesting thing on Hackaday. Hackaday is looking for a part-time how-to editor. And he says he's looking for someone who isn't afraid of a soldering iron. Apparently he wants somebody to write a couple of how-to, I guess hardware-oriented how-tos for... kind of a web zine that he has called Engadget. It's pretty interesting. And it's a paid position. I noticed that he's got lots and lots of responses, but I thought that our listeners might be interested in that. And you just go to the Hackaday site, and you'll see the Hackaday or the Engadget site, and you can see what we're talking about. And anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting in the world of QRP news. I see the GQRP Club is continuing to work on the Super Drug Radio. It's not a good name for the radio. It sounds vaguely illegal. I think they're calling it the £2.90 radio, but they seem to be having a lot of fun with that. And I noticed this isn't really QRP news, but I guess it's a QRP transmitter. But they think they found the crash site of the British Beagle 2 Mars spacecraft. That was the one that landed exactly 1 year ago. 1 year and 1 day, I guess it was supposed to land on Christmas morning. We were all waiting for it. And sadly, they didn't get a signal. But they think they've spotted the crater that it landed in. And apparently, it just had some bad luck and bounced off the side of a crater. So I guess that's a QRP story, because it's certainly be a QRP-ish signal by the time it got here. Anyway, I'm beginning to ramble. KL7R, M0HBR. The spreadsheet, it's in Microsoft Works. It's a Microsoft Works spreadsheet. So you should be able to open it if you have that program on your machine. The weather, I was just looking at my, over here to the thermometer. It's about 45 degrees Fahrenheit here in London. Overcast, as usual this time of year. And I know what I'm getting for Christmas, Mike. It's kind of cool, but the clouds. I hate the cloudy skies now, because I know this thing's coming. I'm getting a new telescope. My wife got me a new telescope for Christmas. It's a 6-inch Dobsonian reflector, which is an upgrade, because I've had a 4-inch reflector here for many years. So we're getting a slightly bigger mirror and a better mount, too. I have this big kind of clunky, you know, telescopes, clunky equatorial mount. And I've gone Dobsonian just for ease of movement and ease of setting it up. You can't do too much astronomy from London, but get a little bit of a view of the sky from time to time, and it's nice to have a telescope to take out. So I'll be exploring the universe at ultra, 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 ultra high frequencies, I suppose you could say. What else up on the list here? We got some feedback from some listeners. Just let me open up that site. I just want to see where. Let's see. Hold on. Let's see, we got John McLaughlin sent in another nice email, and let's see, we're happy to hear from him, and let's see, got an email from Doug Geiger, KB1DJF, thanks for the email there, Doug, and hold on, there was another one that came in. I don't want to forget him, because he's been our friend in Tulsa. It'll take me a few seconds here. Let's see. Stand by. Well, I'm just flipping through the email here. Ah, of course. Brad Smith, WA5 PSA. Send some feedback. Thanks very much, Brad. And we're pleased with the number of people that are downloading it. I hope people are enjoying it. And maybe if there are a lot of new iPods under the Christmas tree this year, we'll have even more listeners out there. The MP3 players are getting really small and really inexpensive, so maybe we'll have some more, I guess it's sort of like time-shifted shortwave listening, digital version. You're back from the spreadsheet adventures, Mike. Have you cracked the code? KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. I got it. It works. It loads just fine in OpenOffice. I fiddled around with changing the emitter resistor, and a bunch of things changed around. So I'm gonna spend some time looking at what you chose for calculations and stuff, and take a peek at that. That's pretty cool. I'll have to. This is a good use for a spreadsheet where one thing changes and then a whole bunch of other things change. So it's a good use for a spreadsheet. I normally don't use spreadsheets. Like I say, a lot of guys use spreadsheets like a programming language, and I use programming languages like programming language. But this is a good use for one where you have multiple outputs, and so that's great, Bill. And I'll look at what you did here with the choices of which calculations you chose to do and stuff like that. Well, I'm kind of rambling tonight. I don't know why. I guess that's because I'm thinking about the stuff you're talking about. Pretty interesting. I enjoy your mentoring. You've taught me a number of things about building, and I really enjoy that. Kind of looking forward to actually building a radio of my own sometime. I'm at the stage now where, you know, beyond the stage of I enjoy building kits, but I'm at the stage now where I kind of am not intimidated by building circuits I see in that interest me, and modifying circuits and blending circuits from one design to another to get what I want. So I don't need circuit boards to do it, and just the schematic is enough. But I'm not really to the stage where I can do linear design from scratch. You're ahead of me still on that one, and I'm sure I'll catch up sometime. But right now, I'm where I'm at. M0HBR, KL7R.
Well, I think we're right at about the same point, Mike, because this spreadsheet is as far as I've gotten with it. But I wanted to get to the point where if I needed to do what you were just doing in terms of putting in an additional amplifier stage in there, what I've been doing up until now is just going to the books and finding something that looks sort of like what I need and kind of just slapping it in there, and then just doing what you're doing, you know, sort of play with the values and play with the input and play with the output and see if I can get it to be linear. But I realize that I'm not, that's not the best approach. And so after reading through solid state design and experimental methods a few times, I'm starting to figure it out. I think it gets more complicated. It gets much more complicated if you throw in tuned circuits. So broadband is simpler, and this amp that I had in mind when I wrote up the spreadsheet is broadband. It's not tuned. And it also gets more complicated if you start throwing in feedback, either shunt feedback or degenerative feedback. So this is without feedback. This is just straight. This is real simple. I should probably send you a little schematic diagram, but you don't really even need it because I just had it sort of in my head as I was drawing up the spreadsheet. But I'll send you off a picture here of what it is, and because you need to know what kind of load, what kind of output circuit it has. It's basically, I'm assuming, a just a broadband transformer in the output. And the ohm, the load resistor value there is what the transistor ends up seeing. So whatever the whatever load appears on the primary, the output transformer, is what I'm using there as a load value. Because that's the important thing in terms of the operations of the amplifier stage. And yeah, it's just kind of it makes things a whole lot clearer for me. And I'll send you an email with some more details on how to use the thing and how you have to watch out for where you start bumping up against the edges of the envelope there, and where you start when you change it around, where you got to watch out for about getting into nonlinear areas and generating distortion and flat topping and things like that. The spreadsheet does make it easier to see how that all happens. Let's see. So this might, if I put this thing together and it works, this might be my first successful effort at real design, which will be fun. A whole new day dawning here in terms of home brewing. What else? The telescope, the iPods. I have a list of things here to talk about. Binaural receiver, heck a day. There was a weird thing that happened. I was looking at the number of downloads on Solder Smoke, and one of them, one episode, by far was getting, far more downloads. It has something like 380 downloads, and I couldn't figure out why. It wasn't particularly good. I think it was Solder Smoke 3. It was just an ordinary edition, but what had happened was when I was sending around the messages, I had inadvertently always used the URL for that particular episode as the URL you should go to if you're interested in seeing Solder Smoke. So time after time, I was sending out these messages to the Usenet groups that were pointing people to Solder Smoke 3. Now, of course, when they got there, they could see the other issues, but that's the one they got to first. So I figured out that when we do these kind of announcements, it's important to have the URL for the current issue, so that, because that's where people go to first, and that's what gets the most downloads. I also think it helps in the advertisement to sort of give a summary of what was discussed during that particular issue. I think that captures gets people's attention. Anyway, enough of the marketing talk. Back to electronics. KL7RM0HBR.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, I meant to ask you about what is a Doskozian reflector. When you mentioned your 6-inch scope, that's a lot of fun. I have a little 3.5 or 4-inch that. And the weather here is so awful as a rule that I usually get it out maybe once or twice a year. I've seen the nebula in Orion's sword, and I saw a number of cool things. But don't have a great scope. I got one of those ones that has its own little tracking unit built into it. Forget the brand name, but it's got a little tracking unit, and it's supposed to automatically track what goes in the sky there. It never worked, so I just do it by eye, and have had a lot of fun with that. So tell me what a Doskozian reflector is. I probably said it wrong. And finding the Mars probe, I read that where they found the impact site. I think that was the one where they made a boo-boo on kilometers versus feet or something, did a metric conversion and wound up eating the planet there or something. I think that was the one that happened to. Let's see what else. I'm looking at your spreadsheet here on this amp, and I see you've got dB down at the bottom, and it says it's got a gain of 3.97, or is it 39.65? And is that dBm or is that dBv? I wonder about that. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. No, it's there where it says gain dB. It's the second column. I need to clean it up a little bit. The first column was shouldn't even really appear. It's just part of the calculations. But it's just dB, just output over input in decibels, 39, which is, of course, way too hot for a real one-stage amp. So you'd have to play around with that. I think they recommend keeping it down, you know, 13 or 15 dB per stage, unless you want to avoid oscillations. Well, I guess with real small signals, it'd be okay. But, yeah, let's see the figure to look at there. If you put the pointer on the cells, you can see the formula that I'm using. So the one that says 3.9, that's just basically, let's see, I can't move it there, but I think that's just the base 10 log of output over input, and then the next column over is times 10 to get the dB. Anyway, yeah, that's what that is. Now, on the Mars thing, no, that's a different Mars crash that you're thinking of. That was a NASA JPL project where they had the metric to English units, imperial units problem. What happened? The Beagle actually was the British built space probe. And everybody was really, really pulling for this thing because it was a very low-budget project. And it was I actually have the poster of it here in the shack, so this is the project's very kind of close to my heart. I've got the Mars Express Beagle 2 poster up here on the wall of the shack, and it shows the landing sequence and what was supposed to happen and what it was going to look like if it opened up. And they were going to use this thing to actually search for life on Mars. It would have been really neat. But of course, landing on Mars is a really difficult thing to do. And what they're thinking happened now, based on the photographs that they've seen, is apparently that it came in and just had bad luck and started bouncing badly on the inside wall of a crater. And they just took a bad fall. I'm not quite sure that they're certain that these pictures they're looking at are the actual landing site. I think it's a bit speculative at this point, but that's what they're thinking. But a great project and great attempt. It's just a shame it didn't work out for them. Hard thing to do. Oh, the telescope. It's a Dobsonian name for John Dobson. Dobsonian reflector. It's just a reflector telescope. It's real simple. A mirror at the base. 6-inch mirror back up to a focal point and out to the eyepiece. But the thing that's different about it is the kind of the mount. Instead of using a complicated tripod, it uses just basically a box. The telescope sits on Teflon pads in a box that kind of swivels around. So it's very easy to move the thing around and point it. And you just track it by nudging the thing every once in a while. So the end result, though, is it's real easy to set up. It's lightweight. You don't have a whole lot of complicated alignments or anything like that. And simplicity is the thing. John Dobson, I guess this is very appropriate for a homebrew discussion because he is the founder of the San Francisco Sidewalk Astronomy Movement. And apparently way back when, he came across a very large collection of old glass from ship's portholes and figured out a way to convert them into mirrors for telescopes. Maria has just walked in. Anyway, hey, there you are. Anyway, the glass from the portholes became the base for the mirrors, and I think they used kind of cardboard shipping tubes to make the tubes for the telescopes. There's Billy. Billy's coming in too. Hold on a second, Mike. Stand by. All right. We've got both kids in the shack, and one on each knee now. So with this discussion of the Dubsonians, I think we're going to have to wrap it up. But the thing about the Dubsonian, the innovative part of it is the mount. It makes it real easy to mount. Sidewalk astronomy refers to taking the thing out onto the sidewalk and letting people who walk by take a look. I did it the other day here. I set up my old telescope out in the front of the house here, and a cab driver from India came by and took a look and saw the mountains of the moon. He got all emotional because his father had built a similar telescope many years before in New Delhi. So it was a good moment for sidewalk astronomy here in London. Hey, I'm going to have to wrap it up. Time to make some cereal and breakfast and say hello to the kids. But Mike, Merry Christmas to you. And Merry Christmas to all our Solder Smoke listeners. Well, I guess the next time we'll talk, it'll be in the new year. It's been great fun. And, let's shoot me an email. We can discuss the use of the spreadsheet. KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, we'll check out the Santa site. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas to all. Yeah, from London. 7-3. Enjoy your breakfast.